through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Thursday. Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps here. Well, he's remote. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. Your girl purposely got plenty of rest, purposely skipped watching the four new episodes of The Circle that dropped last night so that we could put together a phenomenal show for you guys. You're welcome in advance. We're going to have Mike Salk joining us at 11:30, get some Mariners talk in there. They're going to return after a day off, this time opening a series on the road against the Boston Red Sox. So we're going to be talking not just about that series, but about the AL West, the A's getting their 11th straight win last night. Did either of you guys watch that game, by the way? It was wild. It happens in extras. They're in the 10th, top of the 10th. The Twins take the lead, a two-run lead with a two-run homer. And then after two outs in the bottom of the 10th, it all comes crashing down because of back-to-back errors. It's insane. Either way, the AL West might be tougher than we thought. We'll be getting to that later. But let's do quickly here a bit of a check-in. Now, Curtis, you went and got your Fauci-ouchie. And so we were talking a
bit.
We're halfway there. So we were talking a bit about, you know, just some health, kind of a doctor's visit type of thing. So we figured, like, let's do a little bit of a check-in for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, it's quiet. It's the quiet period of the season right now. We're a week ahead of the draft. Once we hit the draft, we're going to have potentially three or more new players to talk about. Then they're going to hit undrafted free agency, more guys coming in. Who knows what kind of trades are going to happen, what kind of deals. So this is the period where we're going to pause, do a little bit of a check-in on the Super Bowl check-in. Are the Seahawks a Super Bowl team? Right now, do not look ahead. Do not look at potential signings. Right now, with what the Seahawks have, are they a Super Bowl team? Jake?
Now, am I going to Vegas or am I going to the casino? And am I dropping my just duffel bags of cash?
Because
I just have that laying around in my house. You know, it's just duffel bags, just go bags. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And going to the casino and just dropping it and betting on that. The Seahawks make it to the Super Bowl today, April 22nd, on a Thursday. 11 o'clock with 100% reckless confidence. I don't know if I'm at that point, Stacey, but I do believe they are in a much better situation roster-wise, offensive philosophy-wise, heading into this year than they were a year ago. And that, to me, gives me confidence in the reality of the NFL, Stacey, is that you are not going to have a... And I know we all love to do it. Hey, who is going to be our Super Bowl picks? Who's going to be that one team that we all preseason-wise think is the favorite? But the reality is you need to be a part of the top tier. You need to be a part of the pool. And if you're a part of that top tier group, you're in it. You're competing for a Super Bowl every single year. And that's kind of where the Seahawks have been able to place themselves. But they haven't been able, especially over the last, I would say, four seasons. Yet last year was a little bit better this way, but their roster didn't have the complete depth, didn't have the top to bottom talent to really compete at the highest level when it came to advancing further into the playoffs. And I feel at this stage, they are in a better situation to do that. They're going to make more additions. Their off-season additions aren't completely over. We have the draft next week. I believe there's going to be about two to three more moves that the Seahawks end up making before it's all said and done through the free agent market. And I believe that they are in a position to really, truly compete for a Super Bowl, to really, truly compete with some of those other teams that we have looked at within the NFC conference, the Packers, the Saints, the other top tier divisions, the 49ers, the Rams, some of these teams that we have looked at and said, man, we either don't stack up well against them or they just have really, really good rosters top to bottom.
Yeah, I think I'm going with no right now. Short answer, too long, didn't read. Super Bowl check-in, are the Seahawks a Super Bowl team right now in this moment? No further additions. You are only looking at this iteration of Seattle's squad. I'm saying no. But it's complicated, and I'll explain my answer. they can be in any game. Like, they're one of the best and winningest regular season teams in the last decade. Truly. Like, there are few teams that have won more regular season games than Seattle has. And obviously they've had issues in the postseason, and we've gotten into that a million times. But because of that regular season success, Seattle is in any game. Like, if you drop them in against any other team in the NFL right now, I think they've got a shot. Against a lot of teams, I think they've got a good shot. But it's about getting there, right? It's about going through the regular season and then getting to the Super Bowl. And I don't know if they can right now because they don't feel as consistent as some of the strongest teams in football. And there's also two big questions I have, one on offense, one on defense. Number one, they need more speed on defense. They need to be faster. And they haven't made moves yet that make me feel like they are. Obviously, the move I'm waiting to see is, can you improve at corner? Can you bring in someone else? And then what does Daryl Taylor or Alton Robinson look like? What does Kerry Hyder look like? If I feel good about those guys, like if Jamal Adams is going to be out there, he's going to be healthier. Say that he's fast, he's looking good. Say you bring in a rookie corner and he's fast. Marquise Blair's out there, he's fast. Jordan Brooks out there, he's fast. When I start seeing some of those guys out there, I'm going to feel better about this defense. But until then, I feel like they're missing speed. On offense, the big problem was adaptability. Now, the good news is that they got a new offensive coordinator. So there's every reason to think that they've changed that. We just haven't seen it yet. So I, at the risk of not giving Shane Waldron the benefit of the doubt, which is unfair, I'm going to say no for right now because I want to see it.
I think it's completely fair. You know, I kind of want to work in reverse here and start with the offense to your answers there. You know, I think it's completely fair to have questions about Shane Waldron. He hasn't called plays in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Until he actually does that, game one, play one, there's always going to be that question. There's always going to be that seed of doubt. But I really, truly feel like he's one of those guys that has prepared for this moment, and you got to start somewhere, right? You don't become a great head coach or a great offensive coordinator or a great, you know, offensive coordinator guru, whatever the case may be, without having that first gig, without having that first opportunity to show what you can do. And I think Waldron has been seasoned enough to be optimistic about what's going on and him feeling confident in his plan and what he wants to do, and how he wants to incorporate this talented crop of talent. Cause he's not walking into this building without any talent, having to work his magic to get production mm-hmm. out of players. He's got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and Chris Carson and Russell Wilson, and he's got a lot of talent to work with, which always helps. But I believe that when you look at the offense, the other aspect of this group that they have to be better at is the utilization of the tight ends. And Gerald Everett, is he going to be that difference maker for you with that group and change that production? Can Disley? I think Disley looked like he'd been recovering from two serious leg injuries back-to-back years. Can he come back this offseason and in the season and look healthier and look better and more confident? I think that will be a key. And then the wild card is Colby Parkinson at 6'7", a big frame, a guy who, you know, was a route runner at first Stanford. Can he step up and be somebody that Russell Wilson can trust? I think that those are all big questions there, but I have a lot of confidence that this offense can be better. But the one glaring weakness that we saw in the very last game of the season, Stacey, was what? It was offensive line. It was the Seahawks offensive line going against Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and Leonard Floyd. And have they improved that group enough where you're not going to see them get embarrassed by one of the better defensive fronts in football? I think they have with the addition of Gabe Jackson. I really do think it solidifies them. Do I think they are 100% out of the woods? No, but I do think that they're in a better situation offensive line wise. And if I'm thinking about this optimistically, maybe Ethan Posick takes the next step, having, you know, two good guards. Damian Lewis is in his second season. You know, that's how you can think about it optimistically. But going to your comment about speed, and we had an interview, a fun interview with Brock Heward yesterday. You didn't get a chance to listen to it. You know, you can download our podcast at 710sports.com or check out the 710 Sports app. But here in cut number one, Brock answered your question, Stacey, about if he could choose one thing that John Schneider would pick in this draft, what would it be?
I got the need and the need for speed in this division, whether that's speed to cover some of the guys that you have got to cover up with the Rams and the Niners and now the Cardinals and all the assets and everything that they've got and who they've got offensively, whether that is speed and violence off the edge, whether that is a freaky speed, really quick guy in the slot that you just love and Shane Waldron loves and says, man, I got DK, I got Tyler. I know Tyler can play in the slot and could do lots of those things, but man, we need some jets. We need some straight jet fuel.
And with that need for speed, with that jet fuel that Brock Heward is talking about, especially defensively, Stacey, mm-hmm. I think a lot of that it comes through having young talent step up. And you pointed to two guys that I think are really important here, Alton Robinson and Daryl Taylor. Those two guys, if they can continue, if Alton Robinson can take the next step, if Daryl Taylor can get himself on the field and flash that talent that the Seahawks really truly believe that he has, this makes this group really, really exciting and dynamic. And but the other thing in terms of speed, we saw them start to play with better speed last year in the second half of the season when defensively they came together. Defensively, they started to come together in terms of their rules and responsibilities. Defensively, they started to stop thinking so much and just play and react. And you got to see Jamal Adams shoot out like a cannon and chase down Dwayne Haskins. You saw him make some big plays. So if they can start the season that way, I think some of that speed or the lack thereof that you're talking about, I think will kind of dissipate when they come into the season with great confidence, knowing what they're doing, what their responsibilities are. I feel like you'll see that team play with a lot more speed than they did a year ago.
I mean, I think that confidence for players that have that ability is what helps, because you aren't wasting time thinking about what you're doing. You're able to be a little more instinctive in your attack, but you also have to have those guys. Like, I love KJ Wright. I hope that he finds a way to end his career as a Seahawk here for a final year. I also wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't, because he doesn't make you faster. So there are some guys that just genuinely are not going to bring the speed that you need on defense. And yeah, KJ Wright isn't the only one.
I hear you. And the other thing is, you know, Bobby, I think when you look at the way that he played last year, you know, everybody kind of questioning him. I think when you have two guys right now, and Brian Monet, and they brought back Al Woods, two, you know, big time pluggers, as you would describe them, mm-hmm. 330-pound plus guys in the middle of the defense. That helps, takes up some bodies and takes up offensive linemen from getting hands on Bobby Wagner. And I think you'll see him play a little bit more faster, a little bit more downhill than he has in the previous couple years. But you do have some of that. Jamal Adams runs a 4.3.
Yep.
You got Jordan Brooks, who runs a 4.4, and you know, you got to see what he was capable of in the second half of the season. There are guys, there is talent there, and there is that speed. But I do get to your point that you are getting to that other breaking point where your age is starting to tilt in the wrong direction defensively. You want to be young. You want a lot of players that are on rookie deals. You know, you saw that with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Devin White. But I think that the Seahawks have the potential to bring all of that together. And they are one of the top, they are right now in the NFC without question. They're a top four team in the NFC. Are they top three? Are they top two? I think it's debatable, but they are definitely a top four team in the NFC. Therefore, they are without a doubt in the Super Bowl conversation. And that's why on April 22nd, I'm optimistic about this team and their Super Bowl chances if they can continue to keep adding and finishing out the rest of their roster through the draft and through free agency.
Let me know what you guys think, too. We're going to get back into this conversation in about 15 minutes when we bring Mike Salk on the show. We're going to be asking him about our very first Super Bowl check-in with the Seahawks a week ahead of the draft. We're ahead of the last wave of free agency. We're ahead of OTAs, ahead of rookie camp, ahead of training camp. This is before everything really gets underway. This is our pre check-in. Is this Seahawks team a Super Bowl team? Right now, April 22nd, 2021. You guys can sound off 710-710. We're going to ask Mike about that coming up next. Before we get to any of it, though, it's 11:15. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Yesterday, we got the news that Antonio Brown settled out of court with his ex-trainer who accused him of sexually assaulting her. So do you expect the Seahawks to remain interested in Brown as an option at wide receiver number three?
Yes, I do. And I think that this also makes other teams slightly interested in him as well. I think one of the big things that was a concern was what his legal issues were, and were they going to continue to hang over his head in a way that would potentially serve him a suspension, have him exit at any time. And so I don't think this isn't a positive thing. I don't want to make this out to be like, hey, Antonio Brown, he's, you know, out of the woods here, you know, that type of thing. Not at all. But I do think that one of the hesitations from a lot of NFL teams was the uncertainty of his legal situations, and that is no longer. So I would not be surprised, but Antonio Brown's market isn't going to all of a sudden spike or jump anytime soon. He will be forever one of those players, kind of like Jadeveon Clowney is, to a lesser degree, a one-year player. He will never get a multi-year deal. He'll never get a mega deal. He will be a one-year hired-on player that's going to be signed just before training camp every year from this point on until he is officially walked away from football.
The Seahawks were interested in Antonio Brown before he was before he settled these charges. They were clearly interested in Aldon Smith. Literally, they will be interested in any player that hasn't committed like some atrocious crime he's still being investigated for or whatever. Like, they will take a shot on almost any player. There is no doubt in my mind that they were potentially interested in Antonio before this, and would certainly kick the tires now if the price was right.
Number two.
Alabama receiver Devontae Smith, the subject of many conversations before the draft, mostly about his size. So is his size a legit concern at the professional level, or is it the most overblown talking point leading up to the draft?
Well, Devonta Smith's weight, to me, would be something that would jump off the page if he was consistently hurt. If this was a guy that just couldn't keep himself on the field throughout his career at Alabama, but that hasn't been the case. He's been relatively healthy in his career at Alabama. Therefore, I don't have a lot of questions about it. And we've also seen proof of concept to this point in terms of DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson, later in his career, he became injury prone, but he was a great, productive, a Pro Bowl type of player in the league, had great impact in the league, being around the same size as Calvin Ridley. So I don't think that this is as big of a deal as necessarily the media is making it out to be. And if so, the NFL just hasn't learned their lesson in terms of overanalyzing certain players.
Totally agree with you, Jake. I think that sometimes the NFL, because they are led by humans and war rooms are led by humans and we are all human, do a lot of the same things, right? Think of how we approach things in our everyday life. Sometimes something feels too good to be true, so we look for a flaw, especially if we're going to be making a huge investment. How long does it take you to choose between one, two, or three things if you're going to be spending a lot for it? It takes you forever, and you try to find the real flaw. Now, imagine that spending is like millions of dollars, potentially, or one of just a few draft picks. I can understand why teams sometimes outthink the room and get a little too cute when it comes to these picks. I think passing on DK Metcalf, for instance, was a huge mistake for a lot of teams. I also understand why teams were hesitant and looked at the neck injury and thought like, oh, I don't know, is it too good to be true? Does he bring too many physical weapons, and am I going to make like an obvious mistake here? I think with Devontae Smith, he is what's interesting, there was a Ringer article that was fascinating that examined like the two biggest critiques against him. And they were like, one is obviously his size, but he was also the best wide receiver this past season in against press coverage, which is where you would be worried about it. On the flip side, corners in the NFL are on average going to be bigger. And so like he was great against press coverage. Is he going to be great in press coverage against NFL cornerbacks? You don't know. It could really go either way. I mean, it's fascinating that the first wide receiver to win the Heisman in 30 years could be taken after another one of his wide receiver teammates. It's wild. I'd love to see him. It is crazy to think about that. I'd love to see him succeed at this level, just because I love it when guys who have one or two qualities that feel outside of the box for teams, like Russell Wilson, like any one of those guys, prove teams wrong. I love it when that happens.
Number three.
We're looking ahead to the 2021 draft class, but let's look back to last year's. So which 2020 Seahawks rookie will elevate their game the most in year two?
Elevating their game the most. This is a good one, because I really am of the belief that Jordan Brooks is going to take the next step. He is going to take the next step and really solidify himself as the next great linebacker in Seahawks history. I think he has all the tools. He has all the stuff. You could see why the Seahawks fell in love with him in the first round. He physically is incredibly gifted. And when he got more and more confident as the year went on and he got more time, you saw him reading and reacting and playing fast and coming downhill and hitting and making a statement. He got better in coverage as well. And so I just think with a year under his belt, him most likely being a full-time starter at the will linebacker position heading into this year, I just think that the arrow is pointing up and pointing, you know, rocket high for a guy like Jordan Brooks. And I'm really excited to see him put together a really, really strong year. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets over 100 tackles this year.
Ooh, I think Jake has probably my favorite answer. So I'm going to go with hopefully an unexpected one. I'm still going to be pushing for Daryl Taylor. I just think that the last thing you want if you're a Seahawks fan is another high pick miss. They almost took Daryl Taylor in the first round. John Schneider joined Danny and Gallant and told them in his post-draft interview, we thought about taking Daryl Taylor in the first round. They also said that on day two of the draft in their post-draft press conferences talking about it. They were that high on Daryl Taylor. They were one of the few teams that actually got Daryl Taylor in for a medical eval where their people could take a look at him before the COVID shutdown, and they still felt really confident. So for their sake, for the sake of fans, for Daryl Taylor's sake, I hope it's Taylor that takes a big step forward. All right, Mike Salk going to be joining us next. Let's go ahead and get back to that question. I want you guys to answer too. Jake and I are going to revisit with our answers, and then we're going to ask Mike Salk. It is our Super Bowl check-in, the first Super Bowl check-in we're going to do this offseason. We'll have a couple more as the different phases of the offseason progress, as new guys come in or are traded away or are acquired via trade. Is this Super Bowl or is this Seahawks team right now, April 22nd, 2021, are they a Super Bowl team? That's next with Mike Salk.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Mike Salk joining us right now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I have one very important question and one question that's significantly less important.
Okay.
First, the very important question.
Yes.
We talked about you, Curtis, Jake, and I during the break while we were waiting to come on, ASMR sounds that you would choose. Curtis has oscillating fan, which I think is the best one, or the sound of a campfire. You said, I like the cityscape. I want to feel like I'm in the city. I don't want nature. I don't want bugs. I don't want birds.
Give me that.
I don't want to know I'm on
street.
Planet Earth.
Yes.
Exactly. I want to know for a fact there's smog outside my window and people driving by.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a city guy, man.
Completely understand.
You know who lives out in the country? Axe murderers.
That's like, exactly how I've always felt.
I'm not comfortable out there at all.
No, I have never felt more afraid for my life than when we drove to Carnation. Beautiful area. And I just wasn't used to being in such an open area. And I was like, I'm going to be murdered today.
I'm good with homeless people walking around my street. I don't like being out in the country with deer out there. Like, those things will get you.
You can't trust them.
I don't want any part of it.
You cannot trust them. Jake knows. So now I'm changing it, though. I want a new twist to it. Again, this is my more important question.
Yeah.
Sports ASMR sounds. The most relaxing, calming, satisfying sound in sports.
I mean, there's nothing quite like throwing on the Golf Channel on a Sunday afternoon when you're thinking about taking a
nap. So you want like the Golf Channel background
I mean, there's
while
there's very little. There's nothing to me better than a little Golf Channel. And by the way, I can nap to any part of the Golf Channel now. Yeah, it might be the Zurich Open going on right now. It might be Jim Nance on a Sunday. Or it could just be Brandel Chambly arguing with somebody on the middle of a Wednesday afternoon. It doesn't matter. Throw on the Golf Channel, I'll fall asleep, and I feel great about it.
That is a good one. That is a great one. A baseball game will get me from time to time as well. But, Salk, we were asking ourselves, doing a little bit of a check-in. Mm. I know you've gotten your vaccines in. And you're ready to go. So it got us thinking a little bit about doing a check-in for the Seahawks and doing a Super Bowl check-in. Where do you think they are at on April 22nd, today, on a Thursday? Are they a Super Bowl contending worthy team?
Yeah.
That sounds like a tremendous amount of confidence.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a no. It's not a no. Like, if you ask me about some other teams, like, no. No, they're not. The Seahawks have one of the few elite franchise quarterbacks in the game, so of course they are. Have they put enough pieces around them and made themselves significantly better? And how do we know enough yet about their new offensive coordinator and what that offense is going to look like? And, you know, no, I don't know all those things yet. So it's difficult for me to be more definitive than that on April 22nd. But are they a contender? Yeah, of course they are. They have Russell Wilson. They have Pete Carroll. They are contenders by virtue of the fact that the two most important spots on any team, head coach and quarterback, are taken care of and with stars. So, yeah, they are, but I don't know that I'm sold yet that they've done enough to really get themselves into that conversation full time.
Now, you have that question. What is going to be the biggest question? Stacey had a couple things that was holding her back from her optimism or her thought process about the Seahawks' chances. What is that one thing that you look at and say, they are just not where they need to be for me to feel convinced that not to get through a regular season, but to get past the divisional round, to get into an NFC championship game? What is that thing?
It's still the front seven for me, and they've improved it, I think. You know, we'll wait and see whether or not losing Jaron Reed ends up hurting them. We'll wait and see what else they do. But the front seven, it's not that it's bad, but is it dominant? Is it dominant like what we saw with Tampa Bay last year? Is it dominant like when the Seahawks were the best team in the league? Is it a dominant front seven that is going to wreck other teams' game plans, wreck other quarterbacks' ability to make decisions, force turnovers? What Pete says, it's all about the ball and he's got the sign up everywhere. Is their front seven going to cause enough havoc in the opposing team's backfield? And as of now, my answer is still probably no.
Yeah, the way I felt about it was, you could drop them in any particular game, and I'd have them as the favorite or think they have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced they can actually go through getting to a Super Bowl and win it. Like, I'm not there yet. So I said right now, no, it's not because I don't think they can get there. It's because the two things I want to see are more speed on defense and better adapting on offense. And I haven't seen them acquire the speed pieces. I think Shane Waldron can be the right piece. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, and we'll see. He's a BBNN grad or a BBNN former coach. So
exactly.
Obviously there's
point.
A lot of upside
exactly right.
there
oh,
with
gosh.
Shane Waldron. Yes. So we'll wait and see. That's where I went to high school. But you say speed on defense. I'll say a cousin to that. To me, it's disruption, mm-hmm. right? Do they have enough disruptive defensive players? Guys who, when the opposing offense has a plan, ruin it. Whether they do it through speed, whether they do it through power, whether they do it through just smarts, whatever it is, guys who get their hands on the ball, guys who force the other team to make bad decisions with it, that's what you need in order to take the ball away from the other team. Why did they lose to the Rams? Turnover battle. To me, it's that simple. I know everyone's going to get caught up in the offensive line, this, that, and the other. They lost a turnover battle 2-0. It's that simple. They gave up a pick six, and they fumbled as they were coming back. And oh, by the way, their defense didn't do anything to take the ball away in the playoffs. That's it. That's the ball game. Yeah, they could have overcome it if they had been much better in the other categories. But in playoff games where teams are somewhat even, what wins? Can you be more disruptive? And can you avoid being disrupted? And unfortunately, they didn't do that.
Yeah, it's a great point. And they have guys that can fit into that category. Obviously, it's very much TBD on the Alden Smith situation. But you also are looking at guys like Daryl Taylor. You're looking at Alton Robinson, guys who showed flashes. Daryl Taylor, who hasn't even seen the field yet, but has that flash talent that, you know, I've heard a bunch from everybody in that building. Extremely excited to get that guy on the field.
Yeah, but I got to see that. I mean, like, I know, it's cool to talk about it, right? Like, Hyder, okay, maybe he'll have that. But when you think about what the Seahawks were like, I know that there's so much emphasis placed on the Legion of Boom, and they got all the press. But I will submit to you that what was more important was the disruption that took place with Brandon Mebane, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Chris Clemens, you know, all of those guys on the, and the, not to mention Bobby Wagner, Bruce Irvin, KJ Wright. When the front seven was flying and they were rotating guys in.
And they were speeding.
Dude, they're so fast.
Their NASCAR package on third down. That's
all
when
of
they
that.
Were at their best.
I mean, just their ability to disrupt other teams. Yeah, it was great to have Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. I'm not taking anything away from those guys. But what I think they've been missing for the last few years is that disruption up front.
Yeah, and I would fully agree with that. Fully agree with you. And that is why, also, I'm going to say, as of today, I think they're in a better situation roster construction-wise than they were a year ago. Mm-hmm. They are definitely better, I believe, than a year ago. So when you talk about disruption, when you talk about that depth at the defensive line position, they are better than what they were a year ago. And I think that they still have the ability to continue to keep adding to this group. And the nice thing is that here on April 22nd, before the draft and before the next wave of free agency after that, they're still not done adding to this group. And that's why I feel pretty optimistic about this team right now.
You mentioned the vaccine. I got the second Pfizer yesterday.
I'm getting mine day after tomorrow.
Arm hurts.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Curtis, does yours? You got yours?
Oh,
morning.
Yeah. My arm's a little sore today.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I got the first.
I've heard that from everyone. My roommate
no
said
joke.
That.
It's no joke in a little
like
arm
a tetanus
pain.
Shot? Is that how it is with tetanus?
It just kind of feels like you got a dead arm. Remember, like, when you were in elementary school and people just punch you in the arm?
That's exactly
what
it feels
what?
Like.
No, because I didn't start fights with people, you
it's
psychos.
It's too bad that I wasn't there. I could give you both a lollipop and make you guys feel a lot better.
Well, I'm not complaining about it.
Stop somebody rubbing his arm.
After the week I had previous with the kidney stone and the stent
getting
and everything
else. Are you going to check back into the hospital after
I may
week?
Have to. Yeah.
And Mike's going to wear a sling tomorrow.
He's going to come in, "Hey guys, sorry, I couldn't sleep
last
night.
Hey, is it cool to go to the ER for this? My arm's a little sore. Any chance you could put me in a hospital
bed? A guy's
going
to come in like
feed me with a
limping
spoon.
With like his leg broken and you're going to be like, "Sorry, sir, I was here first.
Sorry, sir,
I don't,
Pfizer too. I got a little dead arm."
Are you Pfizer fam?
Yeah.
I'm going to be Pfizer fam.
Yeah. I was talking to G yesterday. He said, "Here's how it goes. You talk to somebody who got Pfizer, like, man, I got that Pfizer.
Yeah,
you talk to somebody who got something else, like, man, I got Moderna."
Yeah, that's sorry, man. Curtis.
No,
is...
I got Pfizer. They were out of Moderna yesterday when I got
that's
to
right.
the.
Man, you don't need that
Curtis.
Moderna
Pfizer
hangover.
Folks.
No, that second Moderna hangover is
all right,
no good.
I got to end this, Jake.
All right. We could talk to like Jake. Half of the Mariners roster about this. The other half would be like, "Yeah, you're crazy."
Yeah, the other
half of
be
the
like,
Mariners roster. Hey, they got to get that done, man.
Like, I don't know if they will.
I feel bad for Scott because Scott has been working really hard on this. We talked so much yesterday about how great Scott is. I know you guys got to go. It does show you the limitations, though, of a major league manager compared to a football coach. He can't force his guys to do this, and it's a bummer. Not, I mean, forgetting about the health stuff, I'll take all the politics out of it. It's a bummer from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, from contact tracing and everything else, they are now at a competitive disadvantage to teams that have gotten to that 85% mark. So I really would be happier if they got there.
People on the text line letting me know, it's nothing like the tetanus shot, but it does make you sore.
I'm sore. I'm definitely sore.
Mike, I'm kicking you off.
See you guys.
Leave us alone. Just kidding. Mike Salk, he'll be back tomorrow. At 11:30,
we'll
check out the Brock
we'll
and Song Podcast.
Yeah.
BrockandSongPodcast.com. Thank you, Mike. All right. Now, we were right in that the Mariners have a lot of promising talent. I am, though, surprised by their good start, but this division might be tougher than we thought. We'll tell you why. Two teams could be creeping in there looking at the top of the AL West and how the Mariners can make sure they stay away. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Now, the Mariners are off to a really good start, but Is this division tougher than we thought? Now, I fear that might be the case. The A's on an 11-game win streak. It serves as a reminder, this pointed out by Curtis, a great point, of just how quickly things can change, because the A's were obviously 1-7 before this. Now they're looking amazing in that latest win they got, by the way, incredibly improbable. It was a comeback in the bottom of the 10th, going into extra innings there against the Twins. Angels are about to get some reinforcements back. Obviously, Otani's been looking great. Mike Trout is Mike Trout. So I'm hesitating to ever say, like, don't feel too comfortable in your division. It's baseball. We all know this. It's a long season. I don't have to tell you this. Rather, I just kind of go back to conversations we were having before the season even started about how the AL West was one of the weaker divisions, would potentially give the Mariners a bit of an edge. What if they get off to a more fast-track pace to their kind of revamp than we expected? Now I'm looking around, and I'm getting a little bit nervous, you guys.
Stacy, why?
Because I'm a nervous person. Have you ever seen a whip it? It's me.
The Dodgers. They just went up against the Dodgers, and they split the series with them. They split two games, and they were very competitive. I mean, those two teams, those teams that you just riled off, are they better than the Dodgers?
No. You know what I will say, though? The Red Sox are ahead of the Dodgers in average runs per game.
Well, and we're about to see what they look like going into the series starting tonight.
How many World Series did the Red Sox win last year? Oh, none.
Exactly.
That's right.
Zero. Zero.
How many did the Dodgers win? Oh, the only World Series.
The only one available for grabs?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And poised to make a run at it again.
Right.
I mean, I get the concern, and I think that there are other teams in this division that are more poised and more put together to make a serious run for the division title and to get into the playoffs. But for me, I look at the A's and I look at, you know, some the Astros. They're getting their guys back, and you look at the Angels. But it's 102. It's 162 freaking games. Like, it's a long, long season, and things can change just like that in the span of 15, 20 games, right? And so I think it's hard to make snapshot judgments about certain teams within that time frame. I mean, the Mariners, what they've been able to do coming out of the gate certainly helps, mm-hmm. and it's helpful to start out that way. But the way that I look at this is I think that the Mariners, when I say that I'm in on the Mariners right now. I am optimistic. I am not on the Dare to Dream Express for Graz and thinking that they've got a great chance of getting to the playoffs and going to the World Series and all that kind of stuff. I'm not taking my dreams there. But what I do think is that I'm in on the idea that this team is taking the right steps, that this team is heading in the right direction where you can play good, competitive baseball, knowing that they are on the right track to building themselves into a playoff team, that they are not very far out away from that. And the other thing, Stacy, that I have to look at is throughout the year, we talk about these 15, 20 game snapshots that you'll be able to have multiple of them throughout the season, is how often are they able to stop the droughts? How often are they going to be able to limit the slumps that they go on? Because right. Every team in this league does it. Other teams are just better at getting out of it. And I think that that's going to be a big challenge to a lot of these young players who are still trying to find their way. And I know Mike Salk a couple days ago declared that he wanted Scott Service to be given a contract extension. I don't disagree with him, but this is also on the coaching staff, too, to show that they can help these guys get out of these significant droughts that we have witnessed the Mariners have over the past couple seasons.
And you don't want to take away from a team when they get a series win, when they get an individual win, but the truth is that some wins, some losses do matter more to a team that is rebuilding itself. Jerry DePoto on with Danny and Gallant this morning, cut number two, saying, yeah, he does put more stock into facing teams like the Dodgers and Houston.
Absolutely. I think you have to. And, you know, these are the best teams. It's hard for me to believe we're going to play a team this year that's better than the Dodgers. So that's a good barometer for what the top of the mountain looks like in this league. And, you know, when we've played, like I said, Houston, the White Sox, the Twins, teams that were in the post season last year. And this is where you make your hay in this league. And, you know, I don't want to dismiss the teams that have not played in the postseason because they have great players too. But, you know, this is it's a great yardstick.
Jake, what I'm finding, and we have about a little under a minute left here, what I'm finding is that I'm using different ways to measure this team because we're still figuring out exactly what they are, exactly what their strengths are, exactly who they're going to be, and most importantly, when they're going to be ready to really push for contention. And I don't think it's bad to use series against the Dodgers and Astros to do that.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so either. And I think this is a great opportunity. You know, the next run here through May 2nd, I think is going to be a tremendous snapshot of what this team is and what they can be, and a legitimate barometer to how competitive they can be. And if they walk out of this next stretch, you know, 500 or above, in terms of, you know, not their overall record, but the record of from the Dodgers to May 2nd after they're done playing the Angels, I believe it is, at that time, I think that's a big-time positive. That's a big-time step in the right direction because all the teams that they're going to be playing through this stretch are legitimate playoff-caliber, talented teams. And so I think that is, if you're Scott Servais, if you're Jerry DePoto, if you're Marco Gonzalez and Mitch Haniger and Kyle Seager, the guys, the leadership group of this team, that should be the goal. That should be the aim point for you at this stage of the season.
All right. We're taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners and Justin Dunn start a four-game series against the first-place Red Sox today, and that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. It looks like NFL teams haven't learned their lesson when it comes to overanalyzing top-tier prospects. There's one we're looking at right now, and it reminds us of two very, very relevant prospects that were overlooked and underwhelmed people in years past. That's coming up next.